Vince, what about the issue of trying to identify people who are potentially sensitive or might respond to bevacizumab? This is a story that gets discussed, again, colon, lung, you know, five different tumors right now. What do we know about that in general, and what do we know about it specifically in terms of lung cancer?
Well, I think it's a great deal more challenging than trying to come up with biomarkers for EGFR-targeted therapy or other specific molecular lesions, because in part the target may well be non-mutated, you know, blood vessels in a tumor or endothelial cells surface. In part may be the mechanism of action in different settings, may be related to interstitial pressure in the tumor. So although we have seen some preliminary data, John Haymack did a nice presentation on this at Paul's meeting in Santa Monica, I think that there are some hints perhaps of biomarkers, but they are sort of a log order behind where we are with other targeted therapies in lung cancer. I don't know if others know more than I or feel differently, but I think it's going to be a real challenge to develop some guidelines for enriching the population for bevacizumab in lung cancer.
Paul?
I'm going to take the Ron Natale devil's advocate approach here.
All right.
I think there is a concern out there in the world of practicing oncologists about toxicity from bevacizumab, and I think that's real, and I think there is an increase in toxicities. That doesn't mean you shouldn't use it, okay, but that does mean you need to look at the comorbid conditions of the patient and look at the patient overall, like Tom did in your decision about this. I do also agree with Mark, though. The lack of bleeding in the CNS patients has reassured me some, primarily from the PASSPORT study. But overall, there is still a lot of toxicity when you use bevacizumab, and it's a concern.
Rogerio, would you like to respond to that?
I think everybody agrees that there is a higher incidence of, you know, bleeding complications and thromboembolic disease associated with bevacizumab. I think what we need to take into account is, like everything else we do in medicine, is risk benefits. And that's what was reassuring about the abstracts, was most of these complications are manageable and not necessarily fatal. So other than the pulmonary hemorrhage issue, which remains a big issue as far as bevacizumab, I still think that in comparison to chemotherapy alone, you know, the higher incidence doesn't necessarily lead to an increase in mortality.
Mark?
And I think all these concerns are real at the community level. We see, the last numbers I saw, only 18 or 20% of patients are getting this drug in the first-line setting. And this is a very important, this is a great drug. It does improve outcomes, but it's got to be administered to the right patient. And I think docs see a lot of patients with all these multiple comorbidities, and we have a hard time quantifying that. I think this reminds us that this drug does have real toxicity that can be severe, and you have to be careful.
Vince?
Just a couple of comments. I mean, the other thing about the Bev use or non-use is that we have, you know, question marks regarding the utility in patients 70 or older, which, of course, is the median age of a lung cancer U.S. population, and 45-99, you know, treated patients with PS 0 or 1. And certainly a lot of folks see PS 2 patients quite regularly. So those are just some other things that I think are quite relevant to the average patient walking into the office practice.
I want to ask a question, Neil, based on what you said, which is how patients react to this information. And I want to know from the participants if they ever had a patient who actually refused bevacizumab based on the toxicity information. Because I personally discuss the issue of pulmonary hemorrhage with everybody, tell them about 45. I have not had a patient who said to me, well, if that's the case, I'm not going to take it. Personally, I haven't had that incident, but maybe others have.
I had one patient that was the primary concern. And I can't remember which literature they read about pulmonary hemorrhage, but they basically said, that's not for me.
Okay.
And this is not curative treatment, right, doctor? I said, no.
Correct.
Palliative.
And the issue I've had was with what Tom's case brought up was, is that now you have subset data with cis-pemetrexed, you have cetuximab data, and so when they hear those issues, when you balance them, then they start getting a little more confused.